Hello and welcome to the Pastor Fury Audio Experience. I'm your host, Pastor Fury, and this is the especially curated audio podcast for all things Pastor Fury. Hope you enjoy today's episode. Hey, you guys, welcome to another episode. We are on episode 4 of the Fury and Friends Show. I'm your host, Pastor Fury, with my co-host, as always, Jariel. Say what's up. You guys, today we've got a great show. We're going to be talking about a lot of fun stuff, some faith-filled stuff. We're going to have a deeper dive in the continuation of an interview with me, explaining a bit more about what the Lord has done in my life since I came to know him. If you missed the first half of that episode or that interview, you can check that out in the episode from last time. But you guys, today we are going to be dealing with this larger conversation around what we're calling verses, where we're looking at things from the old and comparing them to some things that are new. And there's been a lot of those things where, I mean, more and more of these days, let's just be honest, throughout entertainment specifically, the scripture holds up to be true that there's nothing new under the sun, right? That things just kind of keep getting rehashed, and like they tell a story once and then they find a new way to tell the same story. So we're going to talk about some of those things that keep getting rehashed, keep finding new life, and maybe if we like the originals better than the new or vice versa. So let's go ahead and get it started off. What do you say, Jariel?
Yeah.
Let's do it. So to begin with, we got Matrix 4, the new trailer just dropped for that. And that's coming, I mean, almost 20 years. I think it was like 18 years since the last Matrix movie came out. And they decided they weren't done yet. It needed to have, pun intended, a resurrection. So let's quickly talk about our thoughts about the original Matrix trilogy and what we liked about that. And then we'll get into like comparing that to the new trailer and kind of what we anticipate about that. So let's looking at the first three films. I might be wrong in these, but we had The Matrix, then we had Matrix Reloaded. And I want to say the third one was Matrix Revolution or Revolutions or something.
Yeah, I think you're correct. Yes.
So let's start off with you. Let's give me your general take on the whole trilogy and then maybe a thing that you really loved about the trilogy.
I think it was like groundbreaking for sure. Like we had never seen anything in terms of like those cool fight scenes, just the concept of, are we living in the Matrix? It really got you to thinking like, could I be living in the Matrix? It was just totally new, and honestly, a totally new way of seeing Keanu Reeves too. So I just really liked it. I did like how they kind of wrapped the whole series up in a bow. So it's interesting that they're coming out with now another film.
Absolutely. I thought, so to piggyback off of what you already said, The Matrix is one of those movies. And even if you detach it from the second and the third film, just the initial release, it was a cultural, like it had a huge impact on culture. It came at just the right time. It was right before, Y2K, and yet everybody kind of freaking out, well, what's going to happen? We've been in 1999, and now we're going to go 2000, And so it was the right thing to be inserted into the culture. And there's so many things that we've now grabbed from that. And like have used as part of our story going forward, the idea of the red pill and the blue pill, and one opens up your eyes and the other one you kind of go back to sleep, the groundbreaking, like you said, the fight scene.
Fight scenes.
Yeah,
everyone does those.
Absolutely. I mean, even as a day camp counselor playing dodgeball with the kids, I'd be all like Matrix, So it landed, and even had some deeper spiritual underpinnings of there being what we see versus like what's really at play. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you don't really know what's going on behind the scenes, and we would talk about that from like the earthly and the flesh sense versus
exactly
and what's really going on there,
and how like Neo sacrificed himself for the people.
Absolutely, there you go, come on. So we're not going to say Neo is Jesus, but no, like that's definitely shades of that, you know. And
yeah,
you see that, you know, throughout like even the Marvel franchises with the first Avengers with Iron Man sacrificing. I mean, okay, Avengers Endgame with Iron Man sacrificing himself. You know? So yeah, there's definitely this theme that you see that there's some spiritual underpinnings going on throughout there. So I thought it was a really great trilogy as well. I mean, some things I wasn't a huge fan of in there. There was some weird stuff. I didn't like that they recast the Oracle. I saw how they tried to spin it, but you know, you got to do what you got to do.
I thought it was
an interesting kind of mind-blowing conversation with him and the architect, you know. I think that was in Reloaded. At first I was like, wait, what's going on?
Exactly.
Those ghost twins in Reloaded.
Oh, I love those.
Agent Smith and like him being like everywhere and that crazy fight scene where they're like all monster piling
on them. Oh my goodness.
A lot of cool stuff in the trilogy.
Yeah.
So this new one, it has its work cut out for it to try and compare. So looking at what we saw, I think we're probably on the same page about one thing that was glaringly absent. Why don't you tell them?
Where's Lawrence Fishburne?
Yeah.
We don't want it.
Do this without Morpheus.
No. It's like, what? Exactly.
And you know, it had me thinking though, because I think where I've seen him most recently from is in Blackish. And I'm like, I wonder if he's just way out of shape. he's John Wick, right? So he makes it work there. But I don't know.
CGI.
Yeah. So I wonder if they've got a really credible way that they're going to try to write him out of the story.
Yeah.
Or I hope they're not going to do the thing where the other guy that we see there that kind of seems to be reenacting their interaction in the trailer.
Yeah.
I hope he doesn't end up being like a recasted Morpheus.
Me either. Like with the Oracle. That would be terrible.
That wouldn't work. And it was interesting. Like it really almost seemed like they're trying to retell the story. So maybe that's what they're doing with this resurrections. Because there's that one, you know, girl that he's following in the trailer that's got the rabbit on her
shoulder,
kind of similar to what we saw in the original.
Exactly.
It's like, I really don't know what they're up to in this.
Resurrection, like a retelling.
yeah. And maybe it is. I mean, you're talking from the launch of the first one, it's over 20 years.
Yeah.
So this is maybe even introducing the concept to a whole new audience, you know?
Yeah.
So
it's going to be interesting for sure to see how they tell the story.
Yeah. I'm here for it though. The action looks like it's pretty consistent, and I think it'll be fun. I just hope they get the story right. We'll see. So moving right along, so other things that we've seen where they're kind of taking an older thought and they're kind of rehashing it. We see that with Suicide Squad. They had Suicide Squad, and I want to say it was like 2016. And then now recently they did The Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
So what are your takes on Suicide Squad? What did you like about it? Or did you like it at all?
No, I loved it. They had some pretty interesting characters. The storyline was a little weak, but I do like all the action sequences, like the monsters, like, that we're turning in the little bubble people. Those are pretty cool. It was interesting.
I'm trying so hard not to cut you off. Cause I'm just, as you're saying all this, I'm like, no.
Like I didn't like that.
And this is what's great about, you know, these conversations, even. Yes, you don't have to always be in agreement, you know?
Yes. And I know we also differ on, you know, we love Harley Quinn, but we differ on the Joker. I love Jared Leto as the Joker.
let me stretch because I'm about to go in.
And of course, any movie with Viola Davis, I just think is amazing.
So
why,
okay, so look, so now that's a good way to bring me into the conversation.
Yes.
Because I really, I mean, she's great. I haven't seen her do anything where I thought she didn't show up and represent, you know?
Exactly.
I liked, I don't know his name though. The guy who did Captain Flag.
Oh, yeah. I don't know his real name either.
So I thought he did pretty good. But so like the first storyline, I'm not gonna hate on it, but like.
It had holes.
I mean, it was there. It came out. It had action. It had a couple of stars in it. Thanks, Will Smith. You know, you were there. Appreciated you. But like the storyline, you know what? I don't even know if it just had holes as much. I mean, maybe, but I didn't even like go deep evaluation wise in it because it didn't grip me. Like there were like the, I don't know. It seemed to have little impact. Like, forgettable, like we had all this conversation, we not once talked about the villain.
Yes.
Like very forgettable. Like what was her thing? Like I don't even remember. Like she
possessed
somebody or something.
Cara Delevingne, and her character was possessed by something that she dug out of a ground, and I don't really know like why she was so upset.
So first of all, mad props on knowing her name. Like I was like, wait, who? Like you just like spoke in like verbal hieroglyphics or something.
She's a model. She has great eyebrows. That's
she has great eyebrows. Well, okay. I mean, I would have been like, yeah, that girl that was in some other things, you know, the same way I kind of did like with Captain Flag. I'm like, yeah, that guy. You know?
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah. So I mean. It was an okay film. I just didn't feel like, you know what? They didn't make me care.
Yeah.
I didn't care about what happened to any of the characters, except actually Harley Quinn. Like I really found myself drawn to her and like, man, she's really nailing everything that I would have imagined Harley Quinn to be.
Yeah.
We weren't supposed to go there by plan, but the Harley Quinn film, I hated that.
You know,
but I thought she is crazy. So let's bring it now to the Suicide Squad. And I think it's a good transition there because actually there was a lot that I felt was very similar to the Harley Quinn film in the Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Where it was just like insane, ridiculous, over the top. Gore and it was like a parody of itself without being actually funny.
Yes.
And you know, it's like they did make an amazing film and they didn't do Sharknado.
No.
And you got to do one of the two. Mm-hmm. And I felt like they were trying to go back and forth.
Yeah.
You know,
because Sharknado's a classic because we know it's satire, it's so bad, and we love it.
Right.
But it was like, you can't go to, let's get serious, and then let's go back down to Sharknado.
Yeah. You know, that was actually, man, I just bring up random stuff. This is why we always go long in these talks. Because I remember that film, what was it? The Kingsman? Did you ever see that one?
I love that.
So I did too. And then there was the scene that I was like, wait a minute, did you just lose your identity? Did you forget who you were? Because I was taking this film seriously. It was like, oh, this is really good. And then all these people's heads exploded in really like ridiculous fashion. And I was like, wait a minute, who are you? What is this movie? Like, what are you trying to be right now?
Yes,
you know? Exactly. And that's what I'm feeling about like the Suicide Squad. It's like, you're struggling with your identity here. Like, pick a lane and I'll ride with you, you know? Maybe. I can't even admit that. Suicide Squad picked the lane. I just didn't like the lane. But they didn't drive really well in their lane.
Yeah.
I felt like the Suicide Squad is driving fast and hard, but in multiple lanes. And I was just like, I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
There was one redeeming moment for me. That came towards the end. I mean, it was almost the very end. I'm going to pull up the quote. I decided I was going to write this down because I was like, okay, I got to have something good that I can say about this film. But, you know, there's one of the characters who's like basically, I mean, I don't want to call her Rat Girl. Do you remember her name?
I don't even know if she had a name or that I care to remember it, but I would say Rat Girl is a good description.
Yeah, so Rat Girl is like sitting somewhere with her dad. I don't know if it was like in a hot air balloon or something. I'm trying to visualize it.
Yeah, and they were in the air.
What was it?
They were in the air. Like, I think they were on a skyscraper, some sort of tall building.
Okay. That sounds about right. And so they're having this touching conversation, and you get the sense of this is kind of where her identity is being formed, right?
Yeah.
And she's sitting there, and he says, the father to his daughter, "Rats are the lowliest and most despised of all creatures. If they have purpose, so do we all." And I was like, oh, okay, that was a good moment.
Yeah,
that's the moment I'm gonna walk away from here, so I don't have to throw the entire movie in the garbage.
Exactly.
But that's one of those reasons why it's like, man, y'all just didn't know who you were trying to be because you were trying to have moments of real impact. Yeah. You know, like I actually felt something with Idris Elba's character and his daughter. Like I felt like that was some real stuff. But then you go all Godzilla on us. With the starfish, and you got, I mean, I don't know, like you can't, like, I get that you're taking characters from the comics, but like Polka Dot Man, like, I'm sorry, you can't be a real serious movie.
It was like, pick one, and that like rat, human rat thing, what?
And I knew when, and oh yeah, if y'all haven't figured it out already, spoiler alert, right?
Major.
I knew in that opening scene that rat thing wasn't dead. I'm like, no, he's gonna come back up. And so I love that they brought him back at the very end. So there's some things that are redeemable, but all in all, I was like, this is kind of a hot mess. I don't know what to do with this.
Yes, if you go into it as it's satire, you'll love it.
Right. Yeah. And then you'll be like, ooh, there's like some powerful moments. Okay.
Yes. Cool.
But if you go in there looking for like a real film and like, oh, yeah. Which I think, you know, is a good transition now for the Justice League to the Justice League Snyder cut. Because I think with those two, we'll start new first. The new one, I felt like that one really felt like a real film.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They're really diving into storytelling. Mm-hmm. And, like,
for sure.
Walk out of there, like, with a stronger sense of who the characters are. And granted, they had 4 hours. So,
exactly.
You better get some storytelling right.
Right?
But I felt like the reason why the first one didn't work, and we talked about this before, was in their 2 hours or whatever that they did, they were trying to make up for the fact that they didn't introduce all these characters and bring us along a journey with those characters like Marvel did with all of their standalone films before the Avengers.
Exactly.
And they were like, it seemed like they were kind of like, well, we need our Avengers film now.
Yeah.
And we don't even know your Avengers yet. Yeah, you know, we don't know the Justice League yet. You've introduced maybe 2.5 characters.
Yes.
And now you think we like are all in, you know?
Yeah. It's like, no, we need more.
Yeah. You need to romance us a little bit before you try to propose. It's like we went on 2 dates and you already trying to talk about the names of our kids.
Right. Analogy. It's like they were forcing us into be in love with all these characters, and it's like we don't know them.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the Flash. They did a good job with him in that film, but it was still like, but I don't get this backstory.
Yeah. And so I really appreciated that about the new one there, that they took the time and gave us the backstory. And it made me walk away much more appreciating the film. And like, I wish that was my initial take. I would probably have had thoughts that there's a healthier debate between, I mean, still there's no real comparison between Marvel and DC, but I would have felt like maybe I could entertain someone else from them. But they're just so hit or miss because they don't have a grand visionary. We've talked about it, you and I, before, maybe not on the show, but like, you know, looking into even just the history of how Warner Brothers has been operating with DC.
Yeah.
They've had such inconsistency in their leadership. There's been this person been fired and this person's coming in, this person getting fired. And each person comes with their own vision about what they're going to do.
Yeah.
We're going to have a big story that we're telling. No, we're going to take these individually. And no, we're going to, it's like, whoa. Yeah. And we feel it on the consumer and we can feel the chaos.
Yeah, because like, if you do so one innocent. Or the other, then we can get on board. But if you keep going back and forth, it's like you lose interest.
Yeah, and you know, it's a thing that I've always noticed. And after this, we'll transition to something else. But one of the things I always noticed for me is expectations are huge.
Yeah,
like sometimes expectations and having inappropriate expectations of a film for me destroys what could be a really good film because I come in expecting it to be one thing. So like you said about the Suicide Squad, like if they expected it to be a parody, then it's like, oh, it's one thing, you know?
Yeah.
But when we're engaging with the DC, you know, the DCEU, if that's even really a thing, we're expecting it to be like the MCU. And the reason why is because you're literally naming it that because you know what we expect out of the that universe thing, except you're doing something completely different and you don't even have a consistent thought about what you're doing. So
exactly.
Yeah, the expectations really matter and they don't even know what to expect. So
no, they're playing on our nostalgia, but they're not really, they don't really have anything to back it up. They're like, oh, they're going to love it because they love these characters. Yeah. And that's just not true.
Nope. And they're just dragging the brand through the mud.
Yeah.
And it's not good. And they each film after film, they keep giving it over to whoever the next visionary is for that film. And they're riding or dying with that person's vision. And they're not all great.
No. So,
that's just it, you know? And the MCU is like, we got Kevin Feige and it's his vision. And that's what we're going to do. Directors can come and participate in that, but you're not going to break it.
Yeah, because it's working.
That's right. That was one of the things that I love that Feige said to Anthony Mackie when they were preparing to do Falcon and Winter Soldier. Anthony Mackie was nervous about stepping into that, you know, frontman position.
Yeah.
And he said that Feige told him, I'm not going to let you suck.
Oh.
You know, and like, there's an endearing part of that. But the truth is, it's because he's like, no, I'm holding the line. If it's bad, it ain't going out. We'll do it again. You know what I mean? I'm not going to let you
run this show.
Right, because I don't put out stuff that sucks.
Yes. Any other questions?
All right. Well, that's our lighthearted elements. You know, let's talk about some other things in the verses, old versus new here. Yeah. Maybe earlier in the summer, the Unshackled Network was invited into an opportunity to share what we were doing in ministry with a bunch of folks down in Austin as Exponential, which is a church planting organization, was trying to learn from other people that are kind of on the cusp of doing something different, kind of innovating in the ways to do church. And by providence and knowing a couple people, apparently I just got invited into applying, was selected to be one of the 20 that went and got to present. And it was a really cool experience where I'm in kind of like this Shark Tank-like presentation thing where, you know, there's these people that are determining whether or not they want to like invest in you. And like, spoiler alert, they invested in everybody that presented.
Cool.
And it wasn't like anything significant, but it was more of like a, we see you, let me pat you on the back and affirm that, you know, you guys are doing, you're doing church, you know? So one of the things that was really cool was like, it became, and I don't know if they planned this, but it became like a conference on innovation, you know, church innovation conference. And I'm sitting back there taking notes and like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
And there's themes that came out, and one of the, and I, you know, I talk about all of this in the video that I did, kind of a, on a recap. So we'll link to that video above here below. And by the way, for the Matrix 4 conversation, there's a trailer out for that. So we linked to that before. Just going to give you a big what's up shout out right now. But yeah. So getting back to what we're talking about here, the one of the biggest takeaways that I don't go into much detail on in the video that's linked here is this theme that I kept seeing where I felt like God was highlighting the small. Yeah. And not that like we need to aim small,
yeah,
but that what we end up doing in so many ways is intentionally like pointing everything to being big, mm-hmm. as though big is better. Bigger is the thing to be celebrated. And it's like, when we, one of the things now is like, when we even talk about, you know, mission or goals, we only celebrate the small as it is like a point on this trajectory that leads to the big.
Yes.
Versus it being something special and precious and worthy of celebration in its own right.
Yeah.
And it's a thing that has really been working in me as I've been going through ministry here in the Unshackled Network for a while. Like the old ways of thinking of like, well, let's see how many people we can get in a room, mm-hmm. and let's see, you know, how large we can, you know, make this gathering, or how many, you know, just whatever it is, whatever you want to be counting. Actually, yeah. I just did a Five by the Fire podcast talking about counting. And whether or not we should be counting, you know, I'm going to link to that too, whether or not we should be counting. And not that there's anything wrong necessarily with counting, but it's the motive behind it. Yeah. And really, when we're doing our counting, in most cases, it's because we want to demonstrate that it's awesome and that God's blessing it. And look at all of this, da 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 da. And like, one of the things that I was learning was that, and I've learned this specifically from Brian Sanders and the Underground Network down in Tampa, that is a ministry that I've been learning a lot from. But Brian Sanders talked about the fact that historically, globally, more often than not, in a significant percentage more, the church is small. I mean, we're talking definitely less than 100 people, in most cases, less than 50, right?
Yes.
And if that is generally true, then really what that's saying is the other ones are like an anomaly. And it doesn't mean that they're like, you're the special ones that everyone should pursue. And it could be, but it doesn't mean that.
Yeah.
But really what it means is what the church is this. This is more consistently what it is. So it's like, if you're someone who is loving to your wife, right?
Yeah.
9 times out of 10. And every once in a while you make a mistake and you do something wrong. You know what I mean? Like, generally speaking, you're loving. Right? Yeah. that's more characteristic of you. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
So that is what is we see as more characteristic of who the church is the smaller thing. And while we shouldn't necessarily say that's what it should be, that's what it has to be, it doesn't mean that we need to only celebrate it being pursuing large.
Yes.
You know, because that's really the truth. The seed is beautiful in the fact that it is a creation of God. And some seeds are meant to become a bush, meant to become a full tree that would be a part of a forest,
right?
And some seeds might only be a sprout. And like, yet they were living out the plan that God ordained for them when they were created.
And that should be celebrated.
Exactly. And he said, it is good, right? Yes. Like when he made creation. You know? Yeah, there's this new dichotomy, this new conversation that I believe that the Lord is really trying. It's probably not a new one. We're just new to the conversation.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
about, you know, us being able to celebrate now and the small and the whatever, wherever it is, and not because it could be something else, but because it is. You know,
you know, when we hear, wow, a church planted and there was like 500 people that show up, like the immediate thought is like, wow, praise God, that's awesome. But if you hear a church was planted and six people showed up, like the guy who did VR church and was talking about how, like, there was like five people there. Like, we need to celebrate that because that's the seed. And it's celebrating the seeds as opposed to just celebrating the forests. And man, ooh, that's it right there, I think.
That's good. Yeah. I think that we have a problem with that in America. I think in America, bigger is better to a lot of us.
Absolutely.
Know? We do it big here. And yeah, I think there's intimacy that's missed when it's big like that. And
yeah,
I think you and I discussed like people in China and the underground churches and how they gather super small because they can't gather. And
yep.
You know, that's just so beautiful because they are experiencing God where it's just two of them with one page of the Bible, and that should be celebrated.
And the goal is different. So too often in America, the goal is bigger. Mm-hmm. The goal is like a physically greater thing.
Yeah.
But what we see in the Bible and what you're seeing more in places like in China, the goal is Jesus.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, the goal is more of him.
Yes. You know what I mean? Yes.
And I don't want to say that like America has all lost its way in the church. But if our goal is not more of Jesus, mm-hmm. and it's become more about getting bigger and expanding, and you can tell me that that's because you want to get more in people. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
But if you're losing the focus of being more Jesus,
yeah,
then I don't know. Like, you're forgetting about God's presence with mm-hmm. the seed, and not just the forest, you know. And
exactly.
Like, sometimes we can, what do they say? You can miss the forest for the trees.
Yes.
I think we can miss God. In the midst of church, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And that, I think, is the thing that has concerned me the most as I've been a part of the global church for a decade here, is that I've been in upset. And I'm not trying to, like, you know, throw shade on specific churches or anything like that. I just know that even in my own heart, like, let me start there.
Yeah.
That I easily get drawn into the bigger,
the
shinier, the more, because this is, mm-hmm. that's what the culture just does. You know what I mean?
And we're like, just Jesus used to it. Like, we're just used to it.
Yeah. And Jesus is like, I'm right here. I'm in this right now. Will you recognize me? Will you celebrate me? Will you enjoy me? Right now, will you delight in me? Will you worship me right now? And not for the sake of something greater?
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Anywho, there's a little old versus new there for you.
Yes.
And it might really be that we are, rather than I'm on the cusp of something new. I don't believe that's true. I believe I'm actually being drawn back to the actual old.
Yes.
Versus there being, you know, a problem and now I'm the solution.
No, yeah, exactly.
I'm a part of the original. God is actually calling us to. And I shouldn't say I'm a part of, like, that's where I want to go. That's where I feel like God is drawing me to. This new monasticism, neo-monasticism, where it's just like a return to the simple and the elegant nature of God's presence wherever we are.
That sounds magical.
It is. I want something.
Yes, I want to go there.
Well, hey, speaking of going somewhere, why don't we now jettison off to part two of the interview? And I think in the interview, I talk a little bit about some of those topics. Yeah. So what do you say we get into it?
All right.
And so ever since that day, a foundational piece of our marriage has been honesty.
Yeah.
And like, that's meant like, you know, there's some hard truth sometimes where it's like, yeah, you know, like where she and I aren't on the same page spiritually too, still to this day. There was a while where she was trying to go along with things, like meaning like pretend that it was such, and I was like, no, I don't want you to pretend.
Yeah.
Like, don't pretend that you have a faith. Like, that's not going to be helpful, you know, because then I'm living in some fantasy world. Like, I want to live in the real world, you know, that's where we can actually connect. And that's been such a beautiful part of our journey so far.
Yeah. So. And I really like that about your story too, how she's not necessarily a believer and that she doesn't pretend. And I love that. She's just is who she is. You love her for that. Yeah. And it's just so cool.
And it's so beautiful too, how the Lord still uses her a ton.
Yeah.
A ton in ways that like don't make sense to me. Yeah. Like, I'll tell you this one quick story, because I used to get into my feelings about like, Lord, why haven't you saved her? Mm-hmm. You know, I would be like, come on, God, like I'm going hard after you now. Like,
I am.
And at this point when I'm having these, like I'm already, you know, leading at a high level in the church. And I think I'd even started like in a pastoral role. And I'm like, and you still haven't gotten a hold of her. And at first for a minute there, I was mad at myself because I was like, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah.
That is the reason why she's still not saved. And then I was in a Bible study with a bunch of couples, and I was the only person in there as a single.
Yeah.
I mean, not single, but I mean, I was only one in there without their spouse. And the whole study was about praying the word over your spouse. And it was super awkward. And I remember that was a transformational study because in that season, the Lord put on my spirit the truth that it's not something that I need to do differently. Cause I went to that Bible study, like, okay, so what are the verses that I should be praying over her to get her to come to you? And like, you know, how should I cause her to change?
What a step-by-step plan.
Yeah. I'm like, come on, give me the secret here. And he was like, okay, here's the secret. Come closer. You're waiting on me. You know? And it was like, wait, what?
Exactly.
So you just haven't done it. So it's not even, because it was easier when it was my fault.
Yeah.
But now I'm mad at you, God. It's your fault. What? Like, I am all out here for you. And this one thing you won't do for me? You've come through in so many other ways. And then, like, I wasn't talking to the Lord for a couple weeks. It was bad. And then I eventually turned the corner because I was like, you know what? I need to like live again. Cause when you're ignoring him, like there's, you know,
it's heavy.
Like it's like,
you can't function.
Right. So I was like, all right, Lord, like we need to talk here. So I began the conversation again and, in that season, I hadn't yet like fully reconciled with him, but like we were talking again. A guy that was the bartender, one of my good friends, was the bartender of the bar that I used to go to all the time. So he knew me at my deepest, darkest.
Yeah.
And I'd been trying to witness to him and invite him to the church and everything. He finally accepted an invite. And so he and his wife showed up and they brought their kids and everything. And I remember we're sitting at McDonald's that was right near the movie theater where our church was. We're sitting there after church one Sunday and he just leans in. We're the four of us are sitting there and he's like, so Armand, what's the deal about this church? Like, why, what's the big deal? Like, why? And I'm like, I'm ready to give my big, you know, spiritual pitch. And before I could say anything, Larissa, chimes in and she's like, I'm like you. Like, I don't believe what they believe. You know, I'm not a into all the church stuff. And most of them know that about me.
Yeah.
And they still love me. They accept me. They don't treat me any differently. And then she goes, I'm not a church girl, but if I'm going to go to a church, I'm going to go to this one.
Yeah.
And I was like,
okay.
No, I was speechless. Cause I was like, I don't need to say anything. Like,
yeah,
that preaches better than anything I could come up with.
Exactly.
Because what I realized in that moment was she was able to step in a way that she couldn't if I had had my way.
Exactly.
Because she would have been just another Christian selling him on church.
Wow. That
and instead, so good. She gets to be one who's basically on the same level that he is. Like, I know where you're at.
Yeah.
And so fast forward about a year and a half, I got to baptize him, got to baptize his wife.
That's awesome.
Because God is God and I'm not.
Exactly.
Right? So that's one of those things that reminds me over and over again, because I have to go back to that memory frequently, that like, just because you think you know what's best, because like real talk, like her being saved, it seems to be the thing that is in line with what God's best would be for any of us, right?
Yeah.
But he has his own plan. He has his own journey, his own timeline for people.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm going to continue to trust you.
You just got to get out of the way.
I'm gonna keep remembering that story. So,
quit interfering. He's got his old plan for Larissa. Yeah.
And I share that right now. Because I think that is even probably the first time I've actually recorded that. I've told people that, but I share that right now because I want to clip that so I can be reminded when I forget. Like, oh, wait, you need to hear this. You need to hear this.
Exactly. Episode 3.
Yeah.
So, that is an awesome freedom story. I was very intrigued and drawn in because I learned a lot of new things about you today.
Yeah. There's a lot in there that people don't know.
Yeah, you struggled with like perfectionism, identity.
Identity's a big one.
Yeah, just, you know, your marriage. I think there's a lot that people, you know, can learn from that, because I think those are all things that we struggle with in our Christian walk. Like, they come into play, especially when one person is saved and one person isn't, or even when both people are saved. You know, you could start off on a journey together, but you know, one of us isn't all the way there, and you backslide, and it is what it is.
And even when we are saved and in the faith, like, the journey doesn't end. Like, truly, it's like beginning. Like, now your journey, like actually walking with him,
exactly,
is just now started, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember there was a moment when I, like, speaking of my identity struggle, like, I was encountering the fact that I, even though I was saved and like leading in high levels in the church, that I still didn't really know who I was in Christ.
Yeah.
And I remember vividly being confronted by a sister in the Lord who was like, no, you are special. You are loved and this and that. And I'm like, because I was talking bad about myself, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I gotta get that right, you know?
Yeah.
And so I remember going to the Word for like 140 days in a row of like, okay, who am I in Jesus? And like, I blogged that story. And one of the things that I thought was happening in that season was that I was fixing the problem of my identity.
Okay.
And then maybe a month or two ago, I realized, like, my identity issues aren't a problem to be solved, but they're a tension to manage.
Yeah.
Like, where it's like, oh, you just need to always be consistently reminded of who you are in Jesus. Not that you learned it one way, check.
Yep.
You got that done now. No, it's like, no, because you're going to forget unless you remind. That's one of the main reasons why we need the word, exactly. is because it's continually reminding us, like we're being, our mind is being renewed, because our mind gets old, like our thinking gets old, it gets stale, and it forgets, it drifts and away from it.
Back to the original sin program, honestly. Yep.
So that's something that I'm trying to continue to keep fresh, is this reality that, like, yo, I need to always have before me who I am in Jesus and be reminded of that truth, you know. And that's one of the things that I try to make a part of our journey in the Unshackled Network, you know, is our identity in Christ, you know.
So speaking of Unshackled Network, what led you to start this Unshackled Network?
Yeah, I'm gonna try to make this one shorter. So I started pastoring in 2012, I want to say. And then in 2014, I was the campus pastor at our second location. And I didn't know it until I went to the second location. But in our original location, we were in a place that was pretty diverse, you know, ethnically and financially, like socioeconomically diverse. And in the middle of Round Lake Beach, and it's not a affluent area by any means. But when I was sent out to campus pastor at our location in Grays Lake in the campus of CLC, I was recognizing in that season that the population was, they had different problems than ones that really spoke to me and my journey. I was really more for the messy, struggling in life, you know, growing up, you know, at a Black church and seeing, you know, the struggles of the minority community. Yeah. That was what I think spoke to my heart, but I didn't realize that, because I went from the Black church to the ethnically, socioeconomically diverse, you know, I'm like, okay. Then now I'm like, oh, this is different. This is not that. And I didn't know that was going to matter, you know, and it did. So I remember my season there was really praying for a burden for people that were a little bit more well off, and knowing that they still need Jesus like everybody else.
Yeah.
And the Lord met me in that. But then as our conversations as a church were shifting, and we went from two locations to back to the one at the Round Lake Beach location, I was celebrating that, even though it was like, yo, but y'all lost, bro. You know, like, but still I was like, no, we won, because like we actually got stronger because more people were trained up to do more things. And now we're back together in the place where I needed to be, you know. Yeah. It was short-lived, because then we all moved to the other location, and I was like, oh no. And the conversation changed, and I won't go into too much of like the behind the scenes conversations, but it was more practical about, you know, what made the most sense long term to grow as a church. And I remember in that season, that was when the Lord started speaking to my heart about one day there'd be a church that he would send me to plant. And I remember in October of 2014 or 2015, was it? I remember it was October, because I remember it was Halloween. Might have been 2014 or 2015. But shortly after the Lord was speaking that to me, I began speaking it aloud to my wife. And then the following February, I went to my first church planting conference. So I'm like hardcore, like trying to learn, all while still pastoring. Yeah. But I wanted to get ready for that eventual day. And I remember, because I have such a focused mind, that the Lord had to like slap me and be like, yo, you're pastoring people right now. Like, focus on that. Yeah. I'm going to get you ready. I didn't send you to go get ready. I'm going to get you ready. And so I just put my head back down and and pour myself back into the people and the mission that the Lord actually had me involved in. And then shortly after that, we merged with this other church in Grays Lake, and then I came on full time, and it was like, whoa, okay. So we're going.
Like, the Lord's doing something.
Yeah, I'm like, whoa. But then August of 2018, so I'd gone full time, I think it was the beginning of 2016. Then August of 2018 comes, and I go on vacation. I take a sabbatical, and I go on vacation to Canada, unplugged from everything.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, you know, alone with the Lord and not thinking about ministry. And in that season, or we're in the campgrounds, the Lord like took that vision down off of the shelf that I'd put it down and said, okay, it's time. And like, he had me reading this book that I didn't plan on reading. I was planning on reading another book, but then in the intro of this other book, the author's like, well, this book has gotten really popular, but if you're reading this book, I think before you read this, you should actually read this other book. That's really the book that leads to this book.
Yeah.
And so I still to this day have never read that book that I planned on reading.
Wow.
I read this other one. It was called Interrupted. And it was about her and her husband. Her husband was an associate pastor at an affluent church, mm-hmm. and how the Lord got a hold of her heart and broke her heart for the poor and was convincing her that it was time for them to leave their church and to go do ministry to the poor. And then shortly after that, her husband received the same call from the Lord. And like, that was completely in line with where I felt like the Lord was already leading me. So I was like enthralled by this whole book. And so I came back from Canada, like I had a second conversion.
Wow.
Like, it was like, I can't even do this anymore. And we were in the middle of this big building campaign and like going to deck it all out. And I remember showing up to our first staff meeting, and I don't even know if I've even told anybody this, but I remember looking around at the first staff meeting thinking to myself, what are we doing? And they hadn't changed.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? It was like, everything was still like what we were doing. I was all on board.
Yeah.
3 to 4 weeks before that.
Yeah.
But like, I had changed.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, I just took, what is it? The red pill or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it was like, it was the weirdest thing. And ever since then, it's just been, I don't know, it's been different. So yeah. I didn't know what the Lord was calling me to, but I knew he was putting on my heart then that like, I needed to now go experience ministry outside of that community. Because I still, you know, believe in what God's doing there,
yeah.
to whatever degree he's, you know, making, you know, moves. And I didn't want to like be a problem. I was just feeling like the Lord was calling me to something altogether different.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know what. And I thought it was interesting too that for many years our tagline at the church was simply different.
Yeah.
And now I was like, well, this might be like way different.
Yeah.
Like, we were like a different version of a thing that is the way. But like, because we were different, you know, Torch was different.
For sure.
We talked about that in your story.
Yeah.
But like, this was like the Lord asking me to really just rethink what it meant to be the church, mm-hmm. you know? And yeah. like, that brought me to the simplest version of it, which is the most reproducible, which is God's people mm-hmm. worshiping him and on mission inviting other people into that worship.
Yeah.
Wherever that exists, that's church.
Yeah.
And so we call that, and this wasn't something that we just created. Like, we were learning from other ministries that were doing this work faithfully for years. and were just inspiring. And I was kind of like reading books like Organic Church by Neil Cole, going down to Tampa, seeing the Underground Network over there, and reading books like Letters to the Church from Francis Chan. And
yeah,
so many things all in this season were just like, oh wow, the Lord is like building something.
Yeah.
And it all comes back down to that intersection of worship, community, and mission. And then shortly after that, I just started having one-on-ones with different ones that I felt like, you know, I'd vibed with in ministry, yeah, and maybe ones that I had discipled, you know, for seasons. And we just started having a coffee or dinner or breakfast, and I was just asking them, what's on your heart? Like, what is God doing in your life? And where are you feeling stirred up about? Because I was trying to pull out of them, yeah, what's the mission that God's got you on? Because what I was wanting, like, I didn't know what mine was at the time.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, what's, because I feel connected to you.
Yeah.
What's God doing in you? And how can I help? Yeah. You know, like, that was it. That was really it. And as I was having these conversations, I'm hearing people talking about, you know, wanting to minister to people in prisons and in the gang world, and hearing people, you know, struggling with the homeless issues that we have. And, you know, and like, I'm like, man, yes, all yes, that too. Oh, yes, yes. And I was realizing that, like, there was a place in all of that where the Lord would call us into, and like, I want to be a part of helping to support, you know, that gang outreach ministry. Yeah. And shortly then after, Frontline Street Intervention happened. And, you know, people, if they heard in the last episode, got to hear some of the story behind that with Chewy. And I remember in the room I'm recording in right now is when Chewy was telling me that the former leader of that was handing him the reins to that whole organization that he'd been a part of for years before. And that was like, what, like a huge God moment. Yeah. And then I was wondering, so what do you want me to do? Like, he's got a ministry, I'm helping him with that. Is there something where you want me to actively minister, Lord? And I'm having these one-on-ones with guys, because in 2018, I dropped an album, like I'm a rapper or something. I dropped an album called Everything to Me. You can find it on Spotify. Look up Pastor Fury. Yes. It's not all super great. There's some things that are good, but it's not all super great. And anyways, I produced the whole thing. I had a lot of fun. Like, I got my production equipment and stuff kind of back here on the shelf. And there's these young guys that are like, ooh, man, that's cool. Can you teach me how to do a thing or two about that? So yeah, I had one-on-ones with them, showing them some things. And then I'm like, oh, well, I can teach you how to, you know, walk with the Lord too, you know. Yeah. So that was how, you know, Beast, Bars, and Bible started. So then that was the beginning of the network. And really what we're trying to do each and every day is find ways to help do like I did in the beginning, is, yeah, discover the calling of believers and help pull that out of them, and then find ways that we can support them in that. So yeah, that's what we've been doing.
I think that's really cool. And one of the coolest things I think about, like, when I think about the Unshackled Network, is how, like, it's like so God, and how it's like so necessary, specifically in this COVID-19 time. Yeah. Like, church is different. You have to think about different ways of doing church. And I just think that that is just really cool that he was like putting a plan in motion, and
I really, you know, it's so crazy to me. So like, I look at like the story of Francis Chan. Do you know his story at all?
A little bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, the quick version is he was a kind of a mega church pastor.
Yeah.
Well-known pastor, had written some books, and out in California, and, you know, had the story of it. All seems like it's going good until the Lord got a hold of him in a different way. Yeah. And it was, I think he had a very similar experience to me.
Yeah.
Because, but he's like back and like still trying to lead the church like that. And it just was, exactly, not, not working right, you know? And he had a conversation with his, you know, leadership team about transitioning out. And then he goes and starts this network of house churches where they're just a group of house churches and looking at the Bible and like, okay, let's do that, you know? Yeah. Like, and all throughout San Francisco. And that was happening. And then he wrote a book, Letters to the Church, that came out as I'm coming out of my, you know, sabbatical, and the Lord gotten a hold of me. So I felt like the Lord got a hold of Francis Chan, sent him out ahead to then encourage and inspire me as he's sending me out ahead. You know what I mean? And then like the world goes nuts. Churches are shutting down. Yeah. And then it's like, people are like, what do we do? And I'm like, oh, hey, I got some ideas. You know, like,
exactly.
Here's what you can do, because you don't need all of those things you think you need, you know?
You don't.
Yeah.
And
like, what was, I think, so powerful and great about that season is that people got a really good quiz, like a test on how their discipleship has gone.
Yeah.
Because if now you find out you actually don't have any way to lead your people, like, that means you weren't discipling people.
Yeah.
You know, because you really only have a couple of leaders and a whole bunch of people just listening.
Yep.
Versus actual disciples that now they can lead their home. They can lead people on their block. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Or are they all still like, gimme. Like, I don't know. So that I thought was a really healthy thing for the church at large to really come face to face with, ooh, this is where our holes are. Or to find out, yes, look how strong we are.
Yep.
Look at how our people are doing it right now. And like, you know, so it was a good litmus test. So
that's what it's about, making disciples.
It's pretty simple. Yeah. Hard, but simple. That's why we need him, right?
Hard, simple, yeah.
He doesn't make it, you know, complicated.
Yeah,
it's just really difficult.
Exactly. And I think it was an important lesson to be learned. I think it's, you know, there's a time for this, there's a time for that, there's a time for both. But yeah. I think you have to have that flexibility too in your ministry. And I just think that's so cool. So what's been the biggest surprise with the Unshackled Network, do you think, to you?
The biggest surprise is, okay. It's partly with the network and partly with me. Some of the things that I, coming out of the former church world, some of the things that I was like, oh yeah, this is part of the problem.
Yeah.
It's so much busyness and, you know, we got so many programs and da 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 da. So I discovered that while that may be true of that world, it was also wholly true of me.
Yeah.
That was something that I brought with me, is this sense of like being so driven to just do and do and do.
Yeah.
And I think if I'm not paying close attention, it's going back to that sense of trying to work for some sort of acceptance, mm-hmm. or some sort of, you know, validation, or feeding insecurities in a not so healthy way, even though it's in the godliest of senses, you know, where it's like, oh, I'm doing this great. But it's like, but why? Right. Yeah. When we talked about in the COVID conversation, right? Like, what's motivating it? Yeah. Maybe you're getting the vaccine, right?
Yeah.
But are you getting it out of fear?
Yeah.
Or are you getting it out of love? Right. So like, yeah, I'm doing ministry, but am I doing it just out of a humble service to the Lord and what he's called me to?
Yeah.
Or am I doing it because I want pats on the back?
Yeah.
Because I want people to think I'm awesome. I'm the bomb. Right. Yeah. So like I've been in this journey recently, really face to face with places where my insecurities are trying to creep back up.
Yeah.
And like, maybe that wasn't just resolved in that place in the garage or during my season going through my identity. Maybe that too is a tension that I need to manage and keep going back to seeing, how am I doing with this? Do I still feel secure in the Lord? Or do I feel like I'm needing to like earn something here. You know? So that I think was a surprise for me, because I actually thought that that was something I attributed to Christendom and that whole mega church or whatever world, that that doesn't come here. No. We are holy. Different. We are. Just give me the Bible and the Holy Spirit and some crumbs and the people who need it. Like, no, you're still a sinner. You're still broken, and you still absolutely desperately need Jesus every minute. That was a surprise. Surprisingly enough, it was a surprise that I'm still a sinner.
Wow, that's typically how it is. Like, oh, I thought that I was delivered from
this. Yes. I am a saint, right? Yeah, still a sinner.
Well, it's been so cool getting to know more about you. So I just have one final question.
Okay.
And I was going to say DC or Marvel, but I already know the answer to that. So.
Marvel for life.
Right. But what is something that you would tell your younger self?
Oh, man. So if I'm talking to like 8-year-old me, I would say, listen to your grandma. Like, she's just not crazy old lady. Like, listen to your grandma. Like, she is speaking such wisdom. And when she passed, that rocked me to the core.
Yeah.
Like, I remember she passed when we were on our way to our honeymoon. We were literally driving, and I remember just bawling my eyes out as we were on our way to the airport.
Yeah.
And I would just say, like, hold on to more and more of the wisdom of your elders, you know? And I think that's even something that I want more of now. Like, I embrace the wisdom of the older folks that have gone before me right now. And I'm like craving it. I'm like, because I've gotten old enough to know I don't know enough. Exactly. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And that was for sure the reality of my journey. The first 30 years was like, I just knew everything. Even as a young kid, like, my cousins will tell you, and they make fun of it when we come together and stuff. They're like, you always thought you knew everything. Like, I was the smart aleck, and it's the curse of having an intelligence.
Yes.
That if you also then have the pride that goes along with that.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that was me. Like, I was a smart kid.
Yeah.
And so I was also puffed up because of it. And I'm like, oh, you didn't know that.
Yeah.
Like, I remember I would have like my aunt, who's like former superintendent of like school districts and stuff. I remember not too long ago, like 3 years ago, we were at a conversation at like Thanksgiving or something. And it was me, my aunt, and my mom in a conversation. And I got ready to say a word. And I switched the word to a simpler word. Like, rather than the word that I was going to say, that was like, I don't even remember what it was. But I remember my aunt called me out on it. And she was like, you know, I know what that word means. And it was just like, it was one of those moments where I was like, yeah, bro. Like, I know you're trying to communicate, but really what you're communicating right now is how little you think of their vocabulary.
Exactly. Yeah. They will never know what this means.
Right? That was literally what was going on in my head for some reason. Yeah. And I think that was just the way that I flowed.
Yeah.
Like, my words are up here, so your words are down here.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm thinking here. So I just got to always think about, how do I bring it here? How do I bring it here? How do I bring it here?
Yeah.
Bro, shut up. That's the problem when you are in so many circles where you're actually not being challenged, you know, with other people's wisdom. If you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Exactly. That's true.
Yeah. If you're always the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Exactly. And you're probably more so doing that for your own ego.
Yeah. So you can be that. You know that. Yeah. You know, that's why I came into this room. So they would listen to my wisdom. Because when I go into those other rooms, they try to tell me to be quiet.
Exactly. Exactly.
You need to be quiet, fool. You need to listen. You need to learn. So that's what I would say. Like, learn the wisdom of your elders, because I think there's so many nuggets that I would say, yeah, trust God more. Like, absolutely. But I feel like all of those things came through my elders. I just wasn't listening. I wouldn't listen.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
So, thoughts on the interview there, Dario?
I just loved it so much. One of the things that I really loved is just how you talk about your relationship with your wife, Larissa, and how you guys are, she's not really, you know, a believer, but she's just still supports you so much. And she also, God uses her to like speak to you and speak to others. And I just think it's like a really good testimony for marriages and just relationships with the Lord in general.
Yeah, it's such a testament to who God is and his power and his grace and how faithful he is. Because though I've kicked and screamed for different versions of our story, the one I'm in is so blessed, you know, and I don't deserve it, you know? So he's done a lot, and I can't wait for what else he's got planned in our journey. So, all right, you guys. Well, that is another episode on the Fury and Friends show. I hope y'all had a good time. I know we had a blast with this, and we want to invite you to go ahead and subscribe if you haven't already. There's going to be more of these. There's more content that comes out outside of these shows, even where there's biblical stuff, there's vlogs, and you're going to enjoy each and every one of the different little journeys that we take you on. Trust me, if you'll come along with us, you'll have a good time, and I know it. And I believe you're actually going to really be inspired and encouraged through it all, because that is the goal. And I know that's what God's been doing in us as we go, and we hope in you as you watch. So make sure you subscribe, and we'll see you back here next time.
Peace. Bye.